The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the host and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to The Lawyer's Edge, a program that seeks to answer your questions on civil, criminal, constitutional, and political legal matters with attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty. Robert J. Slama is a U.S. veteran and prominent attorney who has served as counsel for some of Jacksonville's most high-profile cases. Robert Slama is a member of the Florida Bar and the U.S. Supreme Court Bar Associations. He's argued cases in Florida, as well as constitutional cases, before the highest court in the land. David Trotty is a Florida Bar attorney, practicing since 2000, and is a certified civil and family law mediator and a qualified arbitrator in the state of Florida. His practice focuses on family and criminal law issues and mediation. He's a former Marine who served in Japan and the U.S. Embassy in Austria and Tanzania. Also a federal police officer with the Central Intelligence Agency. It's now time to discuss today's legal topics and issues and how they impact your family and small business. Now, live from the WBOB studios, here's attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty.
Good afternoon, Jacksonville, and welcome to another edition of A Lawyer's Edge. Roger is in the studio with me today, and we're going to be discussing, David and I had left off from last week. He has a previous engagement, which is why David's not here in the studio today. However, we had started a number of, issues that come out of not just the school shooting that happened in Parkland, Florida, but also that deals with mental health issues in the legal system, both in and out of criminal, family, different areas that it shows up on. So we want to talk about that today. We also want to take your calls. Please call us at 222-TALK, 222-TALK. And again, I'm giving away the Costco gift card. Call in, your name will go into a hat, and we'll pull out a person, the lucky person. I like to look for people that are giving us good questions, and we certainly want to encourage you to call us. Roger, I want to give you a little update what we're doing. Okay. Tomorrow I'm going to be traveling down to Parkland with my son. What we have been doing is, as you know, I put together a banner, and the banner has been circulated to the Army ROTC.
Junior ROTC.
J ROTC.
Yeah, the regular ROTC is for college students.
Correct.
And they're making a commitment to actually, you know, sign up as a military officer after graduating from high school, college. However, the junior ROTC, it's just a extracurricular class.
Correct. There's no contract for joining or becoming part of the service, either way, either as an officer or enlisted if you don't make it. But what we're doing is, I've been to a number of schools. I went to, today, for example, I was at Paxson and Wolfson, having them sign the banner. Yesterday, I was at Englewood. And very interesting to see, among these children, young kids, boys and girls, who were involved in the program. As you know, Peter Wang, that was one of the young men down in Parkland. But there were two other children as well. There were three ROTC
JROTC
students who were killed. We're putting together a scholarship for the school in the name of the three cadets. So the PTA for that school will be able to give away a scholarship for one of the students this year, this graduating class.
That's very thoughtful.
And we want to do that to continue on the memory of these fine young people. But what's so interesting with the banner, because I've had people, you know, some, this isn't a political thing. In other words, the banner doesn't have a political slogan and it doesn't have a political purpose. It has a very simple purpose. The news was asking me today, why are we doing a banner? I said, well, you know, way back when, I go back to Katrina when I first started doing the banners. The reason I did it was, after you have this horrific act that comes through and disrupts and destroys life in so many different ways, I went out there. I went out to Houston. I was out at the Astrodome the Reliance Center. We also supported Danny Werfel in his Desire Street Ministries.
Right. Just for the backstory, many of the evacuees from New Orleans went to nearby Houston, Texas, as New Orleans was recovering.
That's correct. It was they had the space and they brought him in. We were there. We were on the floor of the Reliance Center. Of course, we came the week after all the celebs left, after Oprah and Dr. Phil and whoever else was there. We still couldn't get a car because in the end, as you would know, when the government comes in, FEMA, they take everything. So our reservation was gone. I spent $250 or so on cab bills trying to get around. Thanks to...
This was before Uber.
This was before Uber, and thank you, FEMA. But anyway, it was quite a trip. And coming out of it, and what I noticed with the banner, and I wish people could have been there to see it, when the banner was being raised up in the Houston Astrodome, this dark facility, keep in mind the police at the time, they were going through people's cots. I mean, this was health and safety, welfare type stuff.
Right.
But I mean, it wasn't what you think it would be. And as you see this banner coming up, I always use, well, we're from Jacksonville, so we know the teal is real, right?
Okay.
Is the teal real? Yes, the teal's real, as we used to say back when. And seeing this beautiful teal banner with the colors that look like the sky, kind of, coming up. And it seemed to me that everybody stopped and they looked.
What did the banner say?
Well, back then, this banner says, very similar to what that one said, although not exactly. That one said, we understand Jacksonville loves you. And there was a big heart in the middle, and off on the side I had Jaguars stuff, if you want to call it that. Plus, on that one, we had the cross with the I guess it's called the St. Matthew's cross or whatever that has the.
The Reliance Center agreed to raise that banner inside the arena.
They sure did.
That's great,
and it was a fabulous thing. This one says, Jacksonville stands with MSD, which is the abbreviation for the high school. It's not Parkland High, as some have calling it. And it has the hearts in the middle, and it has their crest. Off on the left, it says faith, hope, and love.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see it on the news tonight on Channel 4. So the whole purpose of this, and having these ROTC, JROTC kids getting together, expressing their sentiments to the other students, and as I deliver this to the ROTC, they can put it up and do whatever they want to with it. But it's, as I told them, it's a couple of things. It's respect. It's honor. It's an expression of love, and we are called, are we not, to stand with our brother. This is from the Christian perspective. When someone's going through stuff, we're not called to just pat them on the back and say, you go, which is what we do, to stand with them. And we can't all go down to MSD and stand with them, as we should. But what we can do is, through the banner, the expression of love, is that as it's there, every day they can look at it, and it's as if we're standing there with them, communicating to them every single day. Message of hope. The things these kids write, just amazing. Their perspective, their hopefulness, their strength, the direction that they're setting, talking to their own peers. That's why we do it. We stand.
Are you inviting the public to contribute to the scholarship fund?
I am. Okay. I am. And if you go on Facebook, look for The Lawyer's Edge. Look for The Lawyer's Edge. I have all the instructions on there. I'm also going to give you a couple of other things to go to. One is, and in fact, while this show is going on, at any point in time, if you want to text me a question, dial 904-838-8607, 904-838-8607, text me a question. But also, you can go to and email me at rjslamalaw@gmail.com. We'll be right back. Call in at 222-TALK, 222-TALK. We're here for you. We're going to be talking about mental health issues, and we're going to continue to talk about what you can do today to help the MSD people. Thank you.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently the jury verdict in Jermaine DeBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Welcome back to The Lawyer's Edge with Robert J. Slama, attorney at law, David Trotty, co-host out today and taking your calls at 904-222-TALK, 904-222-8255. Robert Slama getting ready to head down to Broward County, to the high school there that suffered that horrific tragedy to hopefully bring them some encouragement, a banner from the students of Jacksonville signed by many of the area high school students, and also offering a scholarship that will be distributed, I guess, by the school's PTA.
That's correct.
For a deserving student. Is it a JRC, ROTC cadet? You want to specify this, or what are the qualifications?
No, what we're doing is in the name of the three students, mm-hmm. all three of them, that's the basis. But a high school senior writing an essay, they have a number of things. Citizenship. We're working off of another scholarship qualification that the PTA was already giving away.
I see.
That was for $500. So they have them writing an essay. They need a recommendation from one of the teachers that they've done public service, community service, that sort of thing.
All the high school kids in the state have to do community service, so that'll be an easy one to get.
Absolutely. But then in this, someone had said to me, what about targeting someone who wants to go to college to be in ROTC, because not everyone in ROTC gets a scholarship.
Right.
So I Vic Murray, a friend of mine, he's an attorney, he was in the Navy. Don't hold that against him. We're in a Navy town. He wasn't. Not everyone, as I say, can be in the Army.
So you were in the Army, right?
I was in the Army.
Who were you in? What was it? The
Signal Corps.
Signal Corps, okay.
Communications. And so, but that was a very good idea by him. And so I'm not sure whether we want to have it be someone who's going on just for ROTC. But we certainly, in the name of the JROTC students, want to put something out there that will help not only just the memory, but also in the school's history,
right,
that I hope that this continues on, that this is not just a one-time deal, but it continues on. Now, here's what I'm also interested in. In fact, my son's going to be going down there with me in his uniform. He's in JROTC at Paxson and delivering the banner to the first sergeant from AROTC, junior, to another member at another school. They're also in our brigade. When I was at one of the schools this morning, there was an inspection going on. I was speaking to one of the, the statewide reps who does part of the evaluation. It's not just the inspection, but it's also kind of part of their accreditation, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And she was well familiar with that school because it's in her area, and she's one of the people who goes down there and inspects them. And had told me, something I didn't know, that three other ROTC students were hit and injured, but they weren't killed. I didn't know that. So there was a number of ROTC kids that were
involved. Well, it gives you goosebumps. So these kids were staying behind when there was an active shooting in progress, evacuating their classmates out of the school when the police wouldn't even go in the building.
Now, you see, and let me just say this, because and I had put this forward. Douglas MacArthur, as we know, years ago gave this very important speech. In fact, one of the judges from St. John's County, someone I like very much and look up to, Judge McGillen, he's from West Point. And I remember one day when I was in court and I was reciting Douglas MacArthur and the great speech that he gave, which defines us. I would venture to say across all branches. He started, as you know, talking to West Point, duty, honor, country, for those words reverently dictate who and what you ought to be. Those words, duty, honor, country, you stop anyone in the military, but certainly in the Army, we understand that. Those kids, and that's what I put there, those kids, particularly Peter and the others,
15 years old,
already understood, and I say understood, that's part of the reason they wanted to be there, because what we share, those of us who have served, duty, honor, country, we understand that the guy on your right and the guy on your left, those are the people, we call them your brothers, you're going downrange with. Those are the people that you stand with. Some of them you don't even know. Some of them you just met and you may not even like yet. But you know that one day somewhere, you're going to be standing somewhere and you're relying on this person not to run, watching your back, standing with you with whatever comes your way. You're relying on these folks for what purpose? Serving your nation. And so we stand forward in duty. We answer the call to duty. You do the duty, as we say, with honor, courage, conviction. And in the end, that's what service means to us, including, up to and including, your life. That's what you're there for. And this brotherhood is defined by these values. And so here, as I heard this story, much like others, at this age, this young, tender age, my son is 14 years old. He's around the same age as Peter was. Maybe Peter was 15. He may have been just a little bit older, 14 and a half, but the same age. And here he is holding a door open, helping other people evacuate, already engaged, as I said online. He didn't have a gun, but he didn't need a gun to serve. He served by holding open a door. That's what service is. And these young, I say children, if you go to the schools, you see them in uniform, see them out of uniform, talk to these kids that are in ROTC. We have a fabulous detachment here. You're talking about 300 at Paxson, 230 at Wolfson, Englewood, 100 plus or so. Throughout the five schools, you've got, 800 to 1,000 kids engaged in ROTC. And that doesn't mean all of them are moving on and going to go into the military. But the values they're learning coming out of there, it's still the same recipe. Duty, honor, country. For those words reverently dictate who and what you ought to be. Now, as we go down, and as the guy asked me today, this was someone from Tom Wills in Channel 4, the duty, honor, country doesn't stop even when we get out. It's still the same. You're there to serve. We have a group of people at MSD down in Parkland, Florida. They need help. They need assistance. And they also need the brotherhood. We follow them there. It doesn't end. It doesn't stop. And when I get done the banner, the last place that's going is over to the sheriff's office. And I want to do a shout out to Mike Williams. I was there yesterday. I will be seeing him as soon as I get off here. Oh, three-ish when he gets out of a meeting. Chief Hackney, one of the most accomplished. You've seen Chief Hackney on TV. I remember him as a sergeant. He was talking about he wanted to be the homicide sergeant, homicide lieutenant. He's run the whole gamut, director, so on and so forth. These are guys dedicated to public service. They believe in public service. They give up a lot to do what they do, and they do it. They do it with a zeal, with a desire to make change, to do a lot of things. So our first responders, our hat goes out to you, and I certainly want to shout out to Mike Williams and his people, because these first responders, particularly we have in Jacksonville, if you've spent any time with them,
absolutely,
they have and many of them. What's always wonderful to me when you, I didn't come from firefighters, I came from police.
Your father was police officer.
He was a first grade detective in New York, which means something in New York. Their police force then, it's still about the same, not as many, but back then was about 40,000. There are about 8,000 detectives, 8,000 out of 40. Of those, there were three ranks, third grade, second grade, and if you watch Blue Bloods, Danny, he's a first grade detective. A first grade, there's probably about 2,000 or less. They walk on water. They're the creme de la creme. They have a whole different level of experience. My dad was a first grade detective. That's what I came from. Now, the folks in firefighters, which is interesting to me, you know, it's a very family oriented thing. That's why it's not uncommon to see among firefighters, not also with police, but I think more so with firefighters.
Multi-generational.
And I mean generations and generations going all the way down. you grow up in it. You believe in it. You learn service. And service is what we're supposed to do. Now you say, why am I spending all this time talking about this? What does this have to do yet with mental health? We're going to break into mental health, and mental health is going to take up some time because it's important. You haven't heard me say anything about politics. In this nation today, if we subscribe to the values, and I'll tell you this because I spoke to a millennial 2 months ago and had a very interesting conversation with her. She was talking about her travels to Europe. Excuse me. And her point was, in Europe, they're defined by their culture, right? If I said to you, Roger, have you been to Italy? You would tell me all about Italian culture, French, German, pick, Austrian. In America, our culture is not really what defines us. If you really get down when you ask the question, and kids get asked this from when they're little to write essays, what does it mean to be American? What you're going to find is, more often than not, no, we're not talking about culture. We're talking about a legal history and a document called the Constitution. And really what we talk about are the values that we share. But I mean, when we say values now, we're not just talking about, as I would say, generalized values. We're talking about something very specific. And it really is deeply rooted in our concept of citizenship. Some would say American exceptionalism, which half the world jokes about, and the other half of us say, yeah, we're exceptional, but what do we do with it? Duty, honor, country, for those words reverently dictate who and what you ought to be. Our discussion has got to get quickly away from where it's been, which is still going on, and understand, smart people. You know what matters most, and if you look at every war we've ever been through, you look at the Civil War and coming out of the Civil War, you pick your favorite. Americans, as you look at the party system had a place. It had a place. But rooted deeply in the constitutional arguments of the day, you can really track who we are if you go to Jeffersonian democracy and his ideals, which kids study in school, but I think we've forgotten about it. Very much the emphasis on liberty, the idea of the individual, always at, in some respects, a natural tension at war with the needs of the republic, the larger grand scale. And individuals, the big republic, the whole story, in between, you got parties, this apparatus, and how we try to get ideas through. You know what always is getting lost more and more these days? There's a struggle for power and control over the apparatus of government. But you know what matters in the end? What we see happening on the street and we saw happen during the storm, right? Neighbors helping neighbors. Friends being friends. We have a number of things we share. It's not that we don't know duty, honor, country. We know it. We just have to come back to practicing it and being it. And people standing up in that same vein, it's like the family fight. It's always over these things that nobody really knows where it started, but it just keeps getting handed down. But when we reach out, and we reach out as neighbors and friends, and putting down all these grand arguments which keep dividing, the source of the division is the strife we bring into the political arena. And how do we end it? Put the strife down. Look at the banner and what the kids have to say. They're not talking about all this stuff and gun control and all. Here's what they're talking about. My friend, my neighbor, you're my friend, you're my neighbor, be strong. What can we do to help? Not only in prayers, be strong, come through this thing. Step out, step forward. Let's come back to being who we know we are. We are friends, we are families. We are bound together by a constitution, which in the end, all it ever said was, we want to make you equal so each of you can live your life purpose with liberty and pursue that thing we call happiness. Please call us at 222-TALK. 222-TALK, you're listening to A Lawyer's Edge. For those callers, I got a Costco gift card for you for $50. Call on in now. We're here for you.
Welcome back to The Lawyer's Edge. Robert J. Slama, attorney at law, is with us today, and he's going to be a busy guy for the next couple of days, getting ready to head down to Parkland, Florida, where the school where the shooting took place a couple of weeks ago, with some encouragement for the faculty and the students, many of whom obviously are still grieving right now, Robert.
Oh, gosh, yes. In fact, when I contacted the principal, I contacted First Sergeant Navarra. I also contacted Ty Thompson, who is the principal there, and he said, thank you for your support. The other said, Navarro said, it's crazy down there. You can't imagine. And I thought, no, we can't imagine, because it's crazy up here on a normal day without all this going on. Here they're trying to clean up a school, and they're trying to get everybody back in. Remember, they have testing coming up, FSATs and all the school testing and things that people have to do, AP tests. All these kids have to do all this still. And focusing and coming back, and this is the time of year, right, when all the fun begins. Spring, spring break, all the good stuff to look forward to. They've been out of school now for 2 weeks. Now they have catching up to do. And catching up in an environment where, as we were talking about on the break, you come into a school after you've been out, and you come back, and you look around, and some of your friends and the people that you knew, ROTC gets together. There's going to be some missing faces, right? It's hard to get back into the swing and get back into real life when you're still grieving and that sort of thing. I remember when I was in high school, we didn't, of course, we didn't have any shootings, but what we had was the band I was in, Cypress Lake, down in Fort Myers, Cape Coral, Cypress Lake High School. We had a large band. We had, I don't know, 265 people. One of our Pantherettes, Faith Sutphin, I was a freshman at the time. She was a junior. She got thrown from her car. Today, you know, back then we didn't wear seatbelts, right? I didn't. I don't know anyone who did. But she had a seatbelt on. Likely she's still alive. The car rolled. She got thrown. Faith died. That was my first experience, and I'm a freshman, so I'm what? My son's age, 14. That funeral, and I remember what our band went through with an accident. We also had another guy in our band, Albert Kelly, who was in a Ford Pinto that got hit and blew up, and he was burned and all that kind of thing. But he lived. But I remember going through this with Faith. I know what it did to us. I mean, for the rest of that year and even coming into the next year, and I can still tell you, even to this day, when I look at pictures and I, you know, see the pictures we post of going back, but I remember then, you'd see the purple and white. We were on a band trip or a bus trip. It's hard not to think of these folks. And you look at the spot where Faith would be, and she's not there. So it's a constant reminder. It's not this, you know, what people may think, overcoming this. You know, you hear people say kids are young, they're resilient, all this. Mental health, which is at the bottom of all of this, it's a real issue. The other day, or I say the other day, it has come to attention now as we're continuing to look into this. This young man, we're learning more and more about Nicholas Cruz and what his history was. But one of the things I like to point out when it comes to what we call mental health, and there's a lot of pieces and parts to it. I'm a lawyer. I'm not a mental health counselor. I can tell you, though, I work with a lot of experts. I have for over 26 years. In the criminal system, we deal with a lot of it there, and we deal with a lot of it in family. Why in the criminal side? Well, when an event like this happens, the first thing they're going to do is go through every medical record, every treatment that he had. You're going to bring experts in to have him evaluated to see whether he is, we call it NGI, not guilty by reason of insanity. So it's going to take usually about 3 docs to look at him. The defense has one, then the state has one. And then if each of those say something different, then you bring a third one in. I call it the tiebreaker. So there's a process. There's a process. But when we're talking about it, Roger, on that end, we're talking about it after the fact. I've represented people, like, for example, I don't know if you remember the person who was up on top of the Matthews Bridge, 10 years ago or so, was trying to drive a car off, couldn't get the car off. He hopped out, and then he jumped. Okay, I represented him. History there that publicized to some extent of mental health history. This goes back. This isn't a new issue, is what I'm saying. So now, What do we know? Well, let's take, when I say the initial places where it tends to start, there can be, from the very beginning, and you've probably heard it said this way, from the very beginning, young child coming up, showing signs of some sort of mental health issues, but they can be very small. It doesn't mean necessarily yet it was some form of psychosis, such as schizophrenia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bipolar, something like this. Some start with, and they have some form of generalized, I'll call it for lack of a better word, generalized anxiety. It doesn't yet mean that someone is violent. It doesn't mean someone's hurting animals and threatening other kids. So there's, in some stages, there's a progression. But with others, I want to get to an event because it's also part of this kid's story. You can have people who have some medical issues, mental health issues, and they're treating for those, some with medicine, some without medicine. There's a behavioral side, and there may also be prescription side, let's say. But an event that triggers things in a way that you can't imagine. His mother died in November of pneumonia. Now, when you have someone...
November of last year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. You take that event alone and you'd say, well, as I hear, any well-adjusted person, that's a hard event, losing a parent. I just lost my mother December 29th. I'm 55. She was 91. It's not easy. This kid, with his history, which is still being sorted out, but essentially, there clearly is a history of a number of things which we're all going to learn in the future. I think his brother was just Baker acted 72 hours, had an issue himself, and sent to a facility. And I'm sure now that the authorities are looking real closely at anyone associated with him, as you would expect. But what happens here is, and I've dealt with this in younger, and I'm using younger men, younger boys, let's say, between, say, the ages of 16 and 20. They have a psychotic breakdown. They have an event that all of a sudden, one day they look in the mirror, as I had one kid I'm thinking of, and he looked in his mirror and he looked back and what he saw he didn't like. Ultimately, later diagnosed as paranoid schizophrenic with different disorders that become part of that. Now, early on, I'm talking between 16 and 20, kids are dealing with different things and different things are showing up. So here's one of the things that I say then that usually shows up and where we deal with it. Within the family is a juvenile, kids getting in trouble, having problems in and out of the system, or not even, it may be later in his high school years, that this stuff starts showing up on the radar. That child now goes into the juvenile justice system, and that may be one place for the child where it starts. A lot of places then where we see it is in injunction court, DV injunctions. Now, in the family law setting, and many of you that are hearing me have experienced this, or right now you're going through it and you don't know what to do. You're with someone and you're seeing changes. You're seeing changes that you don't know what they are. Erratic behavior, changes in aggression, words, verbal, maybe even physical, throwing things. You know, clearly that's an indicator, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't always have to be that extreme. At the same time, buying, collecting, getting into weapons, guns, knives, all that kind of stuff. All of those are bad. Now, what people don't know what to do is they don't know where to start and where to intervene. And then, because we're going to talk about that, where and how you intervene. Then some are thinking, well, I guess there's got to be you know, a quick and easy solution to this. And then if you're in the context of a divorce, you're adding additional stress to an already stressed situation, an event, and that event can trigger new thoughts, many of which may be irrational, others of which, you know, that progression of the anger and whatever else, and now it starts manifesting itself into an object. So between young kids, there's a progression. Older people, there's a progression. And then add to it divorce and other stressful things, losing a job. You've worked for 10, 15, 20 years. And don't discount an injury that takes you out of the regular cycle that you have. And there, off we go. Please call us at 222-TALK, 222-TALK. You're listening to The Lawyer's Edge. Give us a call. We're standing by. We're here for you. Call us.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently, the jury verdict in Jermaine DeBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
The Lawyer's Edge with Robert J. Slama. David Trotty out today with the previous engagement and talking about the tragedy in Parkland at the high school there that was shot up. And you're heading down there now to offer some encouragement, offering a scholarship, and you're inviting members of the listening audience to maybe even contribute. How can they help with the scholarship fund? Right now, I understand it's at $1,500.
That's correct. What I did was, and just so you know, I people talk about these GoFundMe pages and all. No, this is personal. This is personal. If you want to call my office, 296-1050, 296-1050, ask for Lori. You can make checks out to the PTSA of MSD High School. MSD is the abbreviation, MSD High. You can go to the Lawyer's Edge, our Facebook page, and you can certainly look it up as well. But what I'm doing is I want to do something in the name of these children, who these three ROTC cadets who gave so much. And for that to help one of the graduates who graduates to have a scholarship, and as best we can to do something positive and make it count. You know, I always think of, and this may sound corny, but it's real to me. I don't know if you saw Private Ryan. And I always say the most powerful part of that movie, and there were lots of powerful parts. You know, the guy, Private Ryan, who was saved, how many people sacrificed their lives so Private Ryan could live? He comes up with his family coming back to Normandy, and he looks at the grave of the captain who took the last bullet for him and was the head of the team. And the last words that the captain, played by Tom Hanks, looks at Private Ryan and says, "You got to earn this. Make this count." And then Tom Hanks dies, and Private Ryan comes back saying, "I hope I made you proud my whole life." You know, I don't know that we always think that way, but these children, they lay down their lives to help other people. And we want recipients and people who graduate and people who get this scholarship to take that same spirit of service, duty on our country, whether they go in the military or not, and take that forth and make it count. Make it count. It's what we all want. It's what we all hope. Mm. And what I'm saying is, and you're kind of looking at me kind of strained, is I truly mean this. Every day of our lives, not only is it a gift, but we're here to serve each other. I hope it doesn't take an event each day for us to wake up and say, you know, the Bible says it this way. Am I truly my brother's keeper? What is the answer every time someone asks that question? Usually they're asking it because they're trying to get out of it. Am I my brother's keeper? What's the answer, Roger? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Now, throw that aside for a minute if you don't follow that line of thought. Let's get back to good old-fashioned constitutionalism. You know what's funny? Our Constitution says essentially the same thing. Because in the pursuit of our happiness, as we call it, right, you have some rights that come with liberty. With liberty come the right to life, liberty, And we always think liberty means happiness. I say liberty includes sacrifice. So we are also our brother's keeper in a constitutional sense because we were created by one creator. We have a common purpose. We have a common origin. Mm. And we have a common destination, right? And if you can change any of that, go ahead and try. I don't think you can. So here's my point. We're all here to serve. And so one of the ways we serve, we're talking about identification of these mental health issues. Along the way, you've heard it overpublicized, and I'm not going to go through the litany of places where someone missed this and someone missed that. To the mothers and fathers, though, that are out here, it's really like this. Here's what I know. I know whatever's going on in your child's head, you're the first one to know it. Because I do these. I have people come in and go, I see these things. Don't get me wrong. I've had parents say, I'm afraid to go to bed at night because my child is doing certain things that scare me. My answer is, now he's 18. They go, what can I do? Very simple. Hang on. It's not just a Baker Act. Let me explain what the so-called Baker Act is for. At any point in time, and there's also the Marchman Act, if it's drug-related, drugs can bring you into a state of psychosis as well. Mm. That would be Marchman Act. What you can do and need to do, because there's no one else to do it. You know, can't walk by this person. Well, he's 18. What am I supposed to do? I'll tell you what you do. You set up a guardianship. Well, I'm his legal guardian. No, you're not. In the sense that you think you're the legal guardian. You had him. You're the guardian. No, he's 18. He or she is 18. Now they need help. There's two types of guardianships. Plenary, where you make the decisions completely for the person. And the other one is what's called a limited guardianship. You do certain things for someone who needs assistance, like take care of the finances, take care of medical, but you let them do the other stuff. Mm. So the system can take care of it. What is it that you need? People need help. People need help. So you figure out through the guardianship parents, you file the guardianship. Now they become a ward of the court. That means you have the right to make decisions based on medical, financial, housing, clothes, the whole nine yards. And it's important that you use that instrument if you have someone who's incapacitated in order to keep up with them. So like this young man, when I heard this, he had a history. And then in November, we know he had a history in school. He had deficit problems. He gets to school. He's having more difficulties, threatening people. They kick him out. Now when they kick him out, you know what that meant? You got to understand, this kid is not the only one who got kicked out of school, right, in Duval County? Do you know how they figure out how many prison beds they're going to make? And you and I have had this conversation before. Based on the dropout rate, what we know and we've known for years, and you've heard me say this, Roger, kids that get in trouble in the juvenile justice system are well on their way to ending up in the adult system. And those same predictors, discipline problems, poor grades, and dropout and fall out of school, they're going to have better than an 85% chance that they're going to end up in state prison. And they start factoring in how many beds that they need based on these sorts of things. Find your favorite high school, your favorite school principal, sit down with them and let them talk to you about how important these numbers are once we lose our kids. So right now what I'm saying, and this is where real crisis and intervention needs to happen, but it doesn't happen with the government coming down with the red flag going, wow, we just found your kid and your kid's identified. Roger, go down to the alternative schools. You realize that the kids sitting in those alternative schools, how many do you think are there? Look up, do your math, and look up the number. Hundreds. For some, that is their permanent school. We already know they're earmarked. Don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about running out and shooting someone. I mean when it comes to crime, criminality, ending up in the state, in the adult system, in state prison and all this kind of stuff. They're your leading contenders. Now add into that group mental illness. Mm. Who's dealing with it? The parent has got to be the one to take the lead. And even when the person turns 18, you know how many times I've heard this? Robert, you don't understand. For this, because of this child, And this is a tearful parent. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this is the drop-off at the door, like a stork. This is the, Roger, I've lost, I can't get people to date me. This may be usually a single parent, but not always. I don't have a life. I can't do anything. I'm trying to keep up with this kid. It's not working. I know what they're getting ready to do. They're washing their hands and saying, I got it. It usually goes like this. I got to take care of my other kids, the other babies. I can't keep up with this one. This one is cut from the nest. Now, what happens when you cut that one from the nest? Roger, who's there to pick it up? You see, everyone's looking for the magic somebody, the pixie dust angel who comes swooping in and says, I got this one.
Bad influences on the streets.
No, there is no one, Roger. There's no one to come in. Bad influences you can put in there. I'm saying that kid, can he maintain a job? Well, you saw this one. They got him a job at the dollar store. He was living with some other folks. They probably didn't fully know his history. And to the extent they did, Roger, they had their lives. They were doing their thing. He didn't get the same attention, the same care, the same, I'm going to use a different word, intervention that his mother gave him. And when he lost that intervention, wherever he was, and I'm not professing today to tell you I know where he was, but I do know this, in November when he lost her, whatever he had in her that helped keep him straighter than he ever was, right after she died, look at the series of events that happened in that kid's life. There were places for people to intervene. Now, that intervention, let's say, let's move to the magic pixie dust. The police come in, neighbors come in, calls come in, anyone comes in. Hopefully a friend would come in, but he didn't have many friends, which is the problem, ultimately a problem. They come in, their intervention can be and is somewhat limited because I just kind of gave you how it would happen. You Baker Act him, you leave him there for 72 hours. He's entitled to due process, but they can increase it beyond 72 hours, either by his consent, stabilize him. Sometimes he needs more. He needs longer. So the idea would be this. Making threats. Yes, you can be arrested for making threats. They can't be conditional threats and some other stuff. But the idea is you bring him into the legal system, and then from there, you start ferreting out all of the services that he may need, including when he comes in. Yes, you can be arrested and then Baker acted. I've had good officers who come out and they go, oh, I'm not going to arrest this guy, but I am going to Baker act him because what's going on, I can tell he's not straight. So they send him through a Baker act. And then the guy may stay in there for 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, continuous. He gets a public defender who's appointed for him. So I'm saying there's a lot of ways this story should have gone. Intervention never happened. He fell through the cracks, every possible place you can find that he fell through, from the FBI, from local law enforcement, through, I'm going to call it family, extended family, friends, if there were any. Every possible place. So the mental health story is a large part of our picture, but there are things you can do, but someone's got to take the lead in intervention. Who is it? Parents, tag, you're it. But Robert, you just said he's an adult. No, he's an adult, but he can be 30 years old. Needs intervention. File a guardianship if he is in some manner incapacitated or unable to manage
himself. And the biological parents can do that for an adult child.
You can do it for another person if you choose to be the guardian, but yes. But listen, go to my Facebook page and you'll see the Lawyer's Edge. The Lawyer's Edge. Please go there. I'm going to keep you updated. Information will continue to be posted on that site. You can also call my office, 296-1050. If you have any issues with mental health or you need a consultation, please call me, 296-1050, 296-1050. I can help you with it or get you on your way. You're listening to The Lawyer's Edge.